I grew up in a very loving family. We loved everyone, which was a little confusing to me as a child because there were also so many people who just weren't our kind of people, you know? Now, my daddy was a pastor. Back in the days when that was a 24/7 job and the church manse was also the battered women's shelter, the food pantry, and a rehab center. My sister and I never knew who would be in the den when we woke up. The only way my dad could really get away from it all was just to leave town. So his idea of a big getaway was a beach vacation. But since he didn't make much money, our beach vacations weren't luxurious affairs. Quite the opposite. We always stayed in these nasty little pastel-colored beach cottages that looked like tin cans with screens. In the summer that I finished sixth grade, we took one of these vacations. Now, usually we went to the Gulf, but this year we were right on the Atlantic Ocean in a place called Folly Beach. Now, these nasty little cottages that we spent our vacations in were not any fun for my mom, because she was a little OCD about cleanliness, just a little obsessive-compulsive. In fact, if cleanliness really is next to godliness, then Mom was in a good place. Our cottage this year was particularly nasty on the inside, so it took her all morning to set it right. By mid-afternoon, she'd finally finished bleaching all the touchable surfaces and was enjoying the ocean from a plastic lawn chair when her afternoon was ruined. Three bikers on Harley-Davidsons came screaming down the road and moved into the cottage next door. They had tattoos. They drank beer. They were not our kind of people. Later that afternoon, we decided to go down and play in the water. Now, places like ours didn't come with beach umbrellas or lifeguards. But on one side of our cottage, there was a very long pier that went way out into the water. And on the other side was a little metal sign that said, "Warning, beware of riptides. Swim at your own risk." We didn't know what that meant, so Daddy just dove in and started swimming. And I began wading in the surf to look for sand dollars. And one of the bikers was at the end of the long pier with his shirt off, his tattoos just hanging out there on his muscles for all the world to see. He was drinking a beer and fishing. And I knew that he wasn't our kind of people, but he was tall and muscular and tan and clearly very worldly, and I found him very scintillating. I was newly 13, just coming into my own as a woman, and I was wearing a brand new polka-dotted two-piece swimsuit. One that only a nun would call a bikini. And in my search for sand dollars, I had wandered out closer and closer to that biker. But I hadn't really noticed how far I was from the shore until suddenly the water was over my shoulders and the sand was sucking at my feet. In fact, it felt like the sand was alive and wanted to eat me. I struggled to get free, and then the sand just suddenly disappeared, and I was sucked out into water that was way over my head. In fact, the water was pulling me inside itself. It twisted me under the water like a crocodile drowning its prey. Mother saw my head bobbing in and out, and she started screaming for Daddy, who immediately made his way out to me. He put his arm around me, and he started swimming back to the shore, but then suddenly He was pulled under the water, too. I clawed his back as the water pulled us under. It filled our lungs with salty, sandy water. We weren't just flailing. We were drowning. We were in a riptide. And then the biker on the pier saw what was happening, and he dove into the water and swam to us. He ripped me away from my dad and pinned my arms to his body with the strongest grip I have ever known. And then he swam in strong strokes parallel to the shore all the way to the end of that pier. He pushed me up onto a piling and headed back out for my dad. I pulled myself up onto the pier, and the barnacles on that thing cut my belly like ginsu knives. I was gasping, but I was alive. Now it was my daddy who was drowning. The tide had taken him far out from the shore, and I could barely see his head. I don't know how the biker got to him, but he did. And he grabbed my daddy's body and again began swimming parallel to the shore. As I ran down the pier to the beach, I watched as he pulled Daddy up out of the surf, rolled him on his side, and began to revive him. That tattooed biker was a Marine. And it turns out that when someone risks his life to save yours, he is your kind of people. But he never even let us say thank you. He just turned and walked back out onto the pier. And I thought, well, maybe we aren't his kind of people. Mother was so stunned by how close we came to dying that day that she didn't say a word the whole rest of the afternoon. Some 40-odd years later, I found myself deep in the bowels of a hospital, deep in a place where only the next of kin are allowed to be. I was in a tiny radiology waiting room the size of a supply closet. In fact, it was so tiny, I'm pretty sure that it originally was a supply closet. It had a weird, ghoulish green cast that I remember hoping came from institutional paint and not radiation. But I was not alone in there. A biker with a black Harley-Davidson bandana wrapped around his head was in there too, reading a year-old People magazine. And he leaned over, put his hand on my knee, and said, "So, sis, what's your story?" Now, I was living a nightmare, okay? My husband had just had a massive stroke. He had a 5.5-inch clot lodged in his left carotid artery that had started breaking off in his brain, and I wasn't in the mood to chat. I remember looking around the room, hoping that he was talking to someone else, especially when I saw the long, thin braid of gray hair coming out from under his bandana. I was having trouble finding words that night anyway. Hearing that your husband might die before dawn does that to you. So I just pushed his hand off my knee and hoped he got the message. He didn't, but he didn't take it personally. He said, "Well, I'll tell you why I'm here. I'm in here waiting on my buddy. He got throwed off his bike up on the parkway tonight, and they brought him in with a chopper. They're in there trying to put his eye back in, stop the bleeding inside his head. There's a reason they say you gotta wear a helmet, you know. I'm only here 'cause he ain't got no one else. Didn't seem right to leave him. A hospital ain't no place to be alone, sis." And then he looked down at his worn leather boot, pulled his right pant leg up, and revealed a shaft of steel where his leg should have been. And as my mouth dropped open, he said, "Oh, I know what it's like. I got thrown off my bike 6 years ago. Red BMW clipped me, never even slowed down. I went over the bars of my hog, fell on top of me. Damn thing exploded, caught me on fire. My buddies, they just kept on riding. I was all alone in here till the chaplain come in. He sat with me. He prayed with me before they took my leg off. And, well, I've been praying ever since. And I'm going to tell you what, sis. God's for real. He's for real. And I don't know what your story is, but I'm going to pray with you right now. And one way or the other, it's going to be all right. And then he took my hand and he prayed with me. And it turns out that when someone you don't even know prays for you when your husband is dying, well, he is your kind of people. I guess it turns out that my angels, my kind of angels, well, they ride Harleys.